If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Nate, have you seen that you've got something in common with Greg Wallace?
What, other than my buttery biscuit base?
Greg Wallace did one of those, you know, day in the life of columns.
When he writes about Necrons.
So, you know, so it was in the Telegraph magazine. It was called Greg Wallace, My Saturday. And there's so much. With respect to Greg Wallace, I understand that this probably isn't every Saturday. I understand that this was put together by some. He didn't write this. Someone asked him questions about what he does. It was kind of slapped together. It probably doesn't paint a picture of the man. However, the picture it does paint is of a twat, and it's very funny.
Oh, wow. Is that what you're implying I have in common with the man? Well,
no. So at 3 p.m., he says, I'm an amateur historian, full stop. I spend 2 hours by myself in my home office. Can you guess what he says next?
Is it thinking about Mesopotamia?
No, it's playing Total War Saga, Thrones of Britannia.
Okay, I didn't see that one coming. Why Thrones of Britannia?
We can only guess. Some of the other highlights are that he has a four-year-old non-verbal autistic son who he then goes on to say he didn't want to have.
No.
Because his wife wanted a kid and he didn't. He also goes for breakfast at the Harvester at 10:30 and he says, I've regularly been disappointed in 3-star Michelin restaurants around Europe, but never in a Harvester.
Now that's like demonic partridge.
The charmed life.
That's breakfast at 10:30, back home for lunch at 12. So he's really...
compressing his meals.
My favourite bit is that he says, 7 a.m, I work out 5 days a week. I'm down at the gym half an hour before it opens. Some poor fucker has to start their shift early so they can open up for fucking Greg Wallace.
Do you reckon he just like waits outside the door, glowering and hammering on it?
Yes. Welcome, listener, to this season 3, episode 5. Definitely episode 5 this week, right?
It could be, yeah.
Is it 6?
Is it 6, I think?
Oh, God.
I think it's 6. I think.
Now, hang on, you said for sure on your email. I'm going to look at my emails live on air.
Oh, okay, no, wait. No, it is 5. I apologise.
You said it is, in fact, episode 5 this time.
Yeah.
There we go.
I was wrong last time. Yeah, see, I knew it. James trying to throw me off.
I'll hands up.
This week we are talking about games that sort of aren't games, maybe. Not Greg Wallace, although at least the Greg Wallace bit was kind of games adjacent because he's an amateur historian who plays Total War Saga Thrones of Britannia.
Is that like his qualification as an amateur historian? Because if so, that's baller.
I know, yeah. He does it a lot in the thing. He has a new health and well-being podcast called A Piece of Cake. And he says, I love chatting to the experts, but I'm quite the expert too, having been journaling, manifesting, goal setting, and reading self-help books for years. Do you know, like...
Hang on, isn't like manifesting like an unhinged Tumblr thing?
That's... No. Manifesting is it has been around for years. Manifesting is when you like... want something and then it happens, but I guess there's an implied that you have to make it happen. But like, I believe
Noel Edmonds' Warlockery, yeah.
Yeah. Noel Edmonds said he was manifesting a challenge and then he got Deal or No Deal, you know. Greg Wallace also says he's in bed at 8 p.m. I've tried sitting on the sofa eating biscuits, but I don't find it fulfilling. And he's normally asleep by 9. Do you know? So when at 9 o'clock tonight, know that Greg Wallace is drifting off.
He's just like suplexing himself backwards into an obsidian slab where he'll become a 2D image of the devil for the night.
Long-time listeners will know that I'm a big fan of Greg Wallace's Inside the Factory, which is where he just goes to a big mechanized shed and then looks at a production line, which they'll obviously they don't turn off. So he's just there wearing a hairnet, despite the fact he has no hair, shouting at someone from Northumberland, going, "You're telling me that these tomatoes are going to travel 10 miles just inside this building?" It's great. I fucking love it.
Is he Australian?
Inside the Factory game. No, that's John Turode.
That's who's right.
His part. I don't know why I've got so much Greg Wallace knowledge. Instant recall.
The deep Greg Wallace lore.
I don't know how to segue this, honestly. Because normally I ask you how you both are, but I feel like we should get going with as little nonsense as possible. We're talking about the rise of games without any goals or restrictions, because there have been a few. Do you know the sort of games we're talking about?
Do you mean like a sandbox game or an immersive sim?
No, so they're like...
Or the Australian questioning intonation?
I think James, you know, like Townscaper, right? And like... there is one called God Box, where you just like set a world going and then watch what happens, you know? Like...
Oh, you mean World Box?
Yeah, World Box.
Oh, I got quite into that, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
But then I kind of fell off it because it was sort of pointless. Which I think is what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, this is it, isn't it? So Townscaper was everyone loved, and you know we're big old fans of, and then in the Steam Next Fest, which is going on still, and we're writing about loads of demos. You can check out the Steam Next Fest tag on Rock Paper Shotgun. There is Summer House, which is where you just make a nice little. You can make like a summer house somewhere, or you can make like a little restaurant or whatever, a little shop. There's a demo in the Steam Next Fest. There's Dystopica, which is where you just build a steampunk city and you can like add advertising and lights and stuff and like make the buildings taller and shorter and things. There's one coming out, it's not a demo for it, but it's coming soon. It's called Monterona, and you just build like a little Italian town, and you can even just there's a button for placing Vespers, you know, like you've seen these, right, James?
Yeah. I haven't played any of them, admittedly, but yeah, Summer House in particular looks very pretty.
It's very cute.
I'm gonna be real with you, I never actually played Townscaper. Can you presee it for me? Because I think in some sort of awful elitist way, I skipped it because I didn't think it was, you know, a needlessly complex enough city builder. But I think I might have missed out on saying lovely.
It is lovely, but it isn't. Yeah, it's not a city builder. You just like put down blocks and then it will sort of procedurally make a town based on just where you put stuff.
So it's like an artistic effort.
Yeah, this is it. And this is what I sort of wanted to talk about. Like, first of all, do we think people are just, you know, seeking ways to feel creative and artistic, but without having to learn to build a game? Do you know? What is the impulse?
I don't know. It's not an entirely new phenomenon because people have been creative for creativity's sake in games for ages. You know, whether it's in Minecraft, or if it's like modded building games give you infinite resources or like map making tools that let you build a Greggs in Far Cry 5. I think the difference with these games, like Summer House or Dystropica, is just that they're designed and built and marketed specifically to appeal to, you know, that right side of your brain that just does want to make stuff for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, great, cool. It's just a matter of, you know, having that approach built in rather than it being something... rather than it's like the player bending the parameters of a more traditionally gamey game.
Well, this is an interesting point as well, because, you know, we're sort of coming close to the idea of play and what play is, you know. So, Nate, you're a great one for dicking about in games and sort of subverting what you're supposed to do in them. Is it less fun when there is nothing to subvert?
God, this is an absolutely fantastic question. it's... So looking at this from, and I hate to be that guy, but looking at this from a neurodivergent perspective, I know I often, like when I'm struggling to motivate myself to, you know, like produce things or be creative, I will often play games to try and get my brain working. Because I'm not having to sort of fill a blank page. I'm not having to make creative decisions. I'm being handed a series of dilemmas and having to come up with answers on the fly, which is less intimidating intellectually. And I think sometimes where I have a really, really good time is where I start to do a game as a structured exercise like that, but then actually start to feel very creative and start dicking around with a game that isn't really meant to be dicked around with. So I think that's the... But then looking at games like Dwarf Fortress, which I spent years and years on, and, you know, that's a very aimless game. Or rather, yeah, it's about making your own objectives, I suppose. But you couldn't say that of something like Townscaper, could you?
Yeah, well, that's there aren't any objectives, which I suppose is sort of the point. And the question I asked you both over email is, if there are no goals, is it even a game? And you, Nate, quipped, not if it's a game of football. Although you can have a game of football without any goals, right? It's just a 0-0 draw.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know about 0-0. I'm no kind of a football fan.
So do we think, like, for a video game to be like a game, you need some sort of purpose, you know?
No, okay, I think good. If there's still an input and an output for the sake of leisure and enjoyment, then, yeah, you can call it a game. Why not? And you could
nice.
You could argue,
like
If a game has goals, but the goals are like meaningless, then is that a game? Like, but it is, because, you know, ultimately, like, most objectives in games are meaningless because they don't, they don't affect real life.
I'm suddenly intensely reminded. Do you remember in about 2010, maybe, like, Charlie Brooker just pole vaulted over a Megamouth shark by claiming Twitter was the greatest video game of all time.
I do remember that, yeah. Yeah. And everyone was like, what?
It ain't it, Chief.
Yeah, yeah, very clever, but like...
Aged badly. I don't know if these games are ever like fully without goals, as you're still like endeavouring towards building a house or a village or a cyberpunk city. So it's not like the goals don't exist. It's more like it's just something you set for yourself. And the game just facilitates that by not adding any, you know, time or resource restrictions on it.
Yeah, that seems a pretty good definition.
This is fair. Okay, next question then. Do you like games like this?
Oh.
The silence speaks volumes.
It's, It's weird because I probably wouldn't like download any of these if I'm honest. But having said that, like I have played a lot of Minecraft, and I have a lot like most of my time in that is just spent, I don't know, just like building stuff and like wandering around. You know, it's not necessarily
that's a brilliantly aimless game, actually.
Yeah, it's not necessarily too, I'm doing this so I can like go kill the Ender Dragon or whatever. It's just I want to make this nice gravel path because I think a gravel path would look nice here.
Actually, I'm just cranking my brain now, and actually this week I've been playing quite a lot of Planet Zoo, and that is a. I'm just going to come out and say it's a rubbish strategy game. It's not its strength. It's an incredible art game because I can make a zoo, and I worship that game for what it does. You know, please, if you're listening, Frontier, don't be offended that I think it's a rubbish strategy game. That's not why I play it. And that's exactly the thing. You know, it's technically, I should be playing it to get my management kibble, but I'm not. I just, you know, want to situate a card piece. So I do like those kinds of game, actually.
I am on the fence about them because I get a bit frustrated with them quite quick because I'm a list-oriented person. Do you know what I mean? And I like being given concrete things to do and achieve. And if I don't have concrete things to do and achieve, how do I know if I am doing the creativity well?
No, you know? I get that.
It's like the joke that I'm going to get a good grade in therapy, something that is both healthy to want and possible to achieve, you know?
Do you like survival crafting games, Alice? Because that's interesting, because they are nothing but lists.
But their lists are not very good. I like crafting games like Stardew Valley where I won't die if I'm not good enough at it. You know,
that's fair.
I'm like the millennial that everyone makes fun of. I want a participation trophy.
Yeah.
You know, and so I really liked Little Witch of the Woods, which is a to-do list.
Oh
game.
Yeah, I played that. Yeah, that's pretty cute.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you say that the long...
yeah, it's real cute.
The Longing was that sort of game? In some respects.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because you like... Yeah, because I suppose you prioritised what you wanted to do yourself. But once you'd explored, you could be like, right, today I'm going to try and do this and... or, you know, I'm going to try and escape that kind of thing. So
because you were very much playing that as a to-do
list. It was a slow...
It was your to-do list, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, right, I want to, like, make his house a bit nicer because it's depressing, but ultimately we want to escape from under the boot of the king under the mountain, you know. So that's true.
You actually made literal to-do lists,
create my own to-do
you?
List.
They were very entertaining.
Yeah, in the article, it was like, yeah, thanks. I've got a little shade plushie as well. They made them on makeshift, so I've got a little... He's staring at me now. It's very cute. Yeah, I think it's interesting that they... I mean, partly it's obviously because people saw the big response to Townscaper and were like, people want this, you know? Like, there is a desire for games like this. But I wonder if it's, you know... People want to like make nice things and they kind of don't have time to learn how to like, you know, do, you know, necessarily like do the thing themselves. And they will never be able to own like a house, a holiday home. So you can just make a really nice one and look at it.
These games are a response to capitalism.
Okay. Yeah.
I was thinking like, oh, we just said like the fact that all these games coming out now is like a response to Townscaper, but I was thinking, like, is like Townscaper and the concept in general a response to something like wider? Sticking to games, like, I think you could say it's a response, like, a wider socioeconomic thing. I was wondering, like, is it a response to just within games? So many games, like, want all your time and want all your microtransaction money.
Games really want you to commit to them long term.
Yeah, exactly. And having these games which basically, like, ask nothing of you, other than like the time it, other than the time it takes to play them. But like, I've seen a dev playing Summerhouse, and they built like a very nice, quite large cafe restaurant in just like a couple of minutes. Ask nothing from you in terms of like gathering resources or raising funds or anything like that, or managing people. It's just something where you you get something that you made quickly and easily, and
like my zoos. Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like trends in games are a little bit, or quite a lot, I think, influenced by like larger world events, because like people who make games live in the world, you know. And my prediction was after lockdown we'd get like a lot of life sim games and like, you know, games about plants and nature and stuff, because everyone had been indoors, and, you know, more co-op stuff, and I was correct about that prediction. So I was smug about that. I wonder what it is. Maybe it is just they sort like how, you know, what should we call it? Vampire Survivors was popular, and then there were loads of similar-ish games, you know. I don't know. I just think it's very interesting. Let's stop talking about video games that, you know, kind of don't exist yet or do exist. I don't know. I've lost it. I've lost my segue powers.
Greg Wallace.
Fuck it. Yeah, it's 3 p.m. It's time to play a game for 2 hours. What have we been playing this week, Len?
So I can finally talk about it now. This explains my absence in a previous episode. But I've been playing Apex Legends Season 20.
Yeah.
It's very much focused on like shaking up, I guess, the metagame of Apex Legends, rather than introducing like a new hero character or a new gun or a new mode or something like that. So they're adding these kind of like MOBA / RPG style like little skill trees. So when you like earn experience points, they're called Evo points in the game. And they already existed because that's how you upgraded your armor. But they're expanding that to now, like, there are, like, I think 3 levels you can upgrade to, and on 2 of those you have a choice of, like, legend upgrade or, like, ability upgrades. And these can be anything ranging from, like, a short cooldown reduction to, or you can use your ultimate twice, say, or you can, like, revive yourself once. Stuff like that. At the same time, they're also, like, slightly changing the shield thing, because you still like use these points to upgrade your shield capacity and thus your health pool, but you can no longer find like better shields, better armor on the ground. So that's like your only way of upgrading your shields. So like you pretty much have to get those Evo points, those XP points, if you want to, you know, have a chance of surviving late game, because there will be, you know, high ranking murder robots who've already got theirs. It's funny because the whole thing is all about encouraging you to play in a very like aggressive, very fighty way, which I should hate, partly because that's not how I'm naturally inclined to play. I like to be very particular about how and when I pick my fights and then do a kind of like hit and run approach. At the same time, though, I did try playing like hyper fighty when I was demoing it. We went to Los Angeles to Respawn's offices. And that not only like went better than I expected, it was but it was also genuinely nice to be like earning these rewards and upgrades as I play. Because like even if you lose, it's like, oh well, I lost, but like I got a load of upgrades. And I know that's just like monkey brain.
No, but it's really good when something's so smoothly designed, it goes straight to the monkey brain.
Mm. Yeah. It's pure like positive reinforcement stimuli. But it was also like probably the most fun I've had in Apex in a long time. So yeah, it's not out yet. I think the season launches on the 13th of February, but I do have a bit of a renewed vigor to get back into it. The only thing I'm really worried about is not how these changes affect the way I play. It's how very, very high-skilled players are going to be like even more dominant than they were before, because now they have, you know, all these like extra magic powers and shorter cooldowns and better shields. Because Apex is already pretty pub stompy. And I remember one of the developers said the idea is to help the rich get richer. And it's like, I don't know if that's entirely the right call.
Read the room, buddy.
I know it's like a competitive game. And it should stay that way, because that's, you know, why winning is fun. But sometimes it's good to help other players be competitive rather than looking at the people who are winning all the time and giving them tools to win more.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm excited for it. So some interesting shakeup of the metagame.
Yeah, that's my old mate Revenant. I miss him.
I think we talked about this on Nate. They redid like most of his abilities. So instead of like,
yes, that's right. You were telling me.
He can do like a big scary jump now.
that was surreal. I had the faint memory of someone else telling me and realized to my horror it had in fact been you on this show. My brain's doing great.
I was the Revenant explainer all along. It's coming from inside the house. I think he's a lot more fun to play now. A lot more like dynamic and also like less bullshit to fight against. Because they changed his ultimate basically, so instead of like you kill him once and he just comes back to life out, it's basically just like adding shields to him to make him a bit tankier. Sure. So there's, which is like not good to, not fun to fight against, but it's it's less horrible than when you get like a complete fair kill on a guy and he just like reappears again. Like
I wouldn't go so far as to say it was enjoyable.
He's still a Barney in it. Simpsons meme. Anyway, yeah, season 20. It's good. Looking forward to it.
Nice. Okay. And as discussed, LA awful. I don't know why. Whatever is mentioned has to be like
drive
terrible.
By. A lot of the people of Los Angeles.
Not the people. The people are fine. It's the city. The city itself must be stopped. I have been playing a couple of things. I've been playing Escape from Mistwood Mansion, which is a room escape game, sort of similar to Escape Academy. There are some nice hidden achievements in there because you're a delivery driver. You turn up with this parcel, so if you carry the parcel all the way through and deliver it, you get an achievement for that. That's really cool. It's maybe a bit short compared to some other works in the oeuvre, in the egg, but... I really enjoyed it. There's also Clem, which is a really, really cute... I'm going to try and write about it this week. Really lovely point-and-click adventure, puzzle adventure. Sort of slightly sinister, like creepy cute. So you play as a little homunculus kind of sack boy made by a terrifying little girl who does magic. And she wants you to collect different aspects for a spell she's doing. So you have to get like... I think intelligence, which is represented by a spider. So you have to get a spider, you know, and persistence, which is a snail. And you have to catch all these little insects and then deliver them to her. And she's quite creepy, you know. That's really cute. It's from the... it's published by the developers of Strange Horticulture, which people will know I loved. So have a look at that as well. One thing I really like about it is that because you're like a little sack creature, like a little cloth doll, your inventory is inside your head because your head's got a zip on the back of it. So when you pick stuff up, you shove it inside your head. It's cute. Then also, the RPS Game Club is back up and running. And this month, it's Cobalt Core, which is a sort of spaceship fighting roguelike deck builder. I don't like it, but everyone... I'm eager to
know why, Alice, because I saw in Slack that you just logged in one morning and was like, I'm sorry for what I said about Cobalt Core.
Well, because
I didn't know what it was, so I was like, ooh.
Well, because I, like, the night before, I'll see if I can find it on the Slack, but, like, the night before I was playing it and the Slack was still open, and I just was like, I hate Cobalt Core. And then the next morning was like, look, I'm sorry I said I hate Cobalt Core, but, like, I'm not enjoying it. I think a large part of that is that I just don't like deck builders, and I don't, you know, I just don't get on with them. So it's not an ideal game for me. I've never played Slay the Spire because I know if I do, I won't like it and people will be disappointed. Like, I just...
It's quite complex, Alice.
There's no deck builder that I've played that I have not hated. Listeners can email in if you've got suggestions for deck builders that I like, but you're wrong, I won't like it.
Let me tell you about a little game called Hearthstone.
Don't even fucking come near me with that shit. I've tried Hearthstone.
Have a nice pint of Domestos with me, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. The other members of the RPS Treehouse, many of them really like Cobalt Core. So you can stick around and read along as people write about Cobalt Core, and then we'll have a live chat at the end of the month to talk about what people thought. But my articles will be like, I'm trying really hard, sorry, but like... Don't like it. Soz. Nate, what have you been playing this week?
Like I said, a bit of the old Planet Zoo. Do you know what a biotope is?
Please tell me.
So it's a thing in aquascaping where you try and recreate a very, very specific microenvironment naturally. So if you were making, for example... a biotope of the Rio Negro in Peru, you'd have acidic water and lots of leaves and things like that. You're trying to make it, you know. So I was, you know, like sort of themed areas with zoos where they have them themed on continents. I tried to do like a big African rainforest, you know, like sort of Arthur Conan Doyle Lost World sort of plateaus covered in misty jungle sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then filled it with gibbons.
Beautiful.
Do you remember when I did that, one of my Planet Zoo articles for RPS, and I had the exhibit called Bear Witness?
I don't.
Where it was a giant stone amphitheater, which you entered into the bottom layer of, and there was only one place you could stand, and it was the toilet. And it was surrounded by 100-meter-high glass windows. And the tiers of the amphitheatre were absolutely rammed with bears that were all just staring down at whoever unfortunate soul was using the shitter.
Oh, my God.
I was just very happy with Bear Witness as the title for that.
It's a real pun-first design, yeah. Love it. My favourite, was it Planet Zoo? It was one where there was a boar trading...
the Warthog economy. Economic meltdown.
Yeah,
yeah,
the
Warthog
economic meltdown. I remember that very fondly. Excellent. James, it sounds to me like a good day to wear hard.
It's always a good day to wear hard. Not really. But yeah, so NVIDIA's RTX Remix Toolkit has recently gone into open beta. Now, this is basically a set of modding tools that can, I haven't used it, but from my understanding, it's meant to be like relatively easy. Remaster old games so that they can have ray traced lighting or DLSS support or like high resolution support, or even it can create like AI generated textures to replace the old ones. And it kind of soft launched last year with Portal with RTX, which I played and was actually very good. But now we're starting to see a lot more games get these big remastering mods. So there's one for GTA San Andreas, which has path tracing. There's one for the original Max Payne. There's one for Need for Speed Underground 2. It's been delayed a bit, but there will be one for Half-Life 2, which is like another... It's like Portal with RTX is going to be like a relatively big, like very heavily backed by NVIDIA mod for Half-Life 2. So I think on a purely cold and technical level, it's kind of cool. And yeah, like I said, I did enjoy Portal with RTX. I thought it looked really good. But these tools can really, really change how a game looks, and some of the AI texture stuff in particular can alter the aesthetic of a game in ways that the original developers may or may not have intended if they had the technology at the time, should we say. So I sent around some clips of these RTX Remix mods, and I basically seek your opinions. Is it cool? Does it spoil them? Is it fine, but maybe just a bit weird? Like, what do you think?
I think it's variable. It seems very variable. So, like, with Half-Life, it makes it look cool, especially with the lighting. It makes it more horror-y, you know, and kind of spookier. With San Andreas, it looks like less old, but I think I don't know if this was a choice on the person using it, but they've completely kind of removed the color grading and kind of the tint that one assumes was intentional on the old San Andreas. It really changes the sort of vibe and the kind of quality.
There's less of the feeling that you're in this like oppressively hot,
exactly,
West Coast of America.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with Max Payne, it just looks stupid. It makes Max Payne look like he's had botched plastic surgery in the 90s.
Max Payne looks very shiny in this.
Yeah. Makes him look well shiny. That doesn't work at all. So I think it very much depends what you're applying it to and how. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about worried about Half-Life 2, because that to me has like a very source games from that era in general have like this very distinct look, and like you look at like a square foot of like brick texture from Half-Life 2, you could look at it and be like, that's some Source. And yeah, I guess to a pretty extensive extent, like Remix can replace that with stuff that's just kind of like, because it's AI generated, like doesn't have that same distinctiveness to it. But actually, like Half-Life 2 RTX like looks pretty good, like you said. I think it still like captures the vibe.
How do the Griblies look? Because I do think that's interesting, because one of the few areas where I think the original could have benefited from a little more bells and whistles is in the the combine biomechanical sort of creatures, like the flying APC and things. I really, really loved the creature design, but I think the textures and sort of polygon counts they had at the time didn't quite do that sort of techno-organic stuff justice. Do they look really, really good now?
I don't think we've seen a lot of them in like the screenshots they've released, to be honest.
It's a lot of Ravenholm and stuff, which is, you know, one of the most iconic.
Like, it's more like environmental changes rather than like character models.
Okay.
It's an interesting, because like Alice O has done some articles about it. When stuff gets sort of like redid, when old stuff gets redid, like the Indiana Jones game and stuff, sometimes it sort of making it look high definition kind of ruins it, which I suppose is the point of this, but like updating stuff for an update's sake isn't always good or necessary, you know? Sometimes it's okay to just enjoy a game as it was. But yeah, I think of all of them, Half-Life looked the best and Max Payne the worst. But as you say, it did, the vibe of San Andreas completely changed. Completely changed. Do you know?
Yeah, I guess that's an example of when the addition of like ray tracing or path tracing in this instance can kind of like indirectly cause problems. The other one I always think of, and I forgot to link to it, but there's an RTX remix mod for the original Tomb Raider. And so because all the lighting inside said tombs needs to be real time, because that's how path tracing works, they basically had to add brand new sources of light. So you'll enter this like 5,000-year-old Egyptian pyramid or something that's somehow full of lit torches.
Listen, you know, that's the old Lord of the Rings joke, right? Where the Nazgul are backlit, and Sean Astin was like, "Where's the light coming from?" And the guy was like, or the AD or someone was like, "Same place as the music," you know. Sometimes it's fine. Can you do us a beans metaphor?
I've never heard that.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Can you do us a beans metaphor, James?
Can I do us a beans metaphor? That's a good one. I guess it might be if the beans company like releases like the recipe for their beans, and I don't know, subsidizes people to buy spoons and pots to try and improve it. And some people do make just a generally nicer, like more nutritious tin of beans, but other people attempt to, I don't know, they put way too much Tabasco in the sauce, say, the beans are too smooth. I don't know.
Smooth beans.
They're glistening too much.
They are glistening too much. They are glistening too much, and they have an improper amount of salt on them.
There you go.
Well, lovely.
Bravo.
Bravo, yeah. Indeed. I'm not sure if we're running like massively under or massively over this week, because I balked up, so my recording's all whack. So I might have screwed it up, Lister. I'm sorry. There isn't a Tower of Jocularity this week again, is there, Nate? But there
No, that is my bad. So in fact, if there is a smaller yolk in this week's egg, that's because, well, I'm the chicken, is what I'm saying.
Listen, we're all busy chickens, you know.
We've all had a week, haven't we?
Sometimes the yolk's bigger, sometimes it's smaller. Sometimes we've done very big yolks, you know, so it all evens out at the end.
Free range, baby.
Free range. I used to have hens. They're fucking awful, awful bastards.
They're all horrible. Birds are very, 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 very horrible.
They are.
That's my mic drop moment there.
From my limited experience, anyway, hens are awful, horrible. We had hens and we had bantams because I grew up in the country. And one time I was hungover, woke up in my bedroom, and I heard like clucking. And I looked up and my younger brother was just standing in my doorway holding one of the bantams, staring at me. And he looked down at the bantam, looked up at me, and said, "She doesn't like you." Looked down at the bantam again, looked up at me, said, "I don't like you either," and then just walked off.
Oh, that tickled me.
And I was monstrously hungover and sort of half asleep, and I was like, "Did that even happen? What's happening? What is life?" Really triggered the fear, you know?
Yeah, so that one settled you.
She didn't like me either. She's awful. All that remains then, I guess, is some recommendations. Because every week we recommend something that is not a video game. James, what are you recommending this week?
So I've been watching The Brothers Sun on Netflix, which is mostly a comedy drama about an American Taiwanese kid in Los Angeles, Alice's favorite city, who discovers his estranged family are all high-ranking members of a triad gang, as is his non-estranged mother, played by Michelle Yeoh. It's pretty funny and like quite heartwarming. And it also uses the stunt choreographers from Everything Everywhere All at Once and the John Wick films. So every now and then in this like cozy, not cozy, but like comedy drama, there's like this really, really good, impeccably shot martial arts fight scene. Which is very, very entertaining, and will sustain you if you're if you've got a bit of a monkey brain like me. We've been watching it basically every day since the weekend. It's very good.
Lovely. I'm going to recommend is this year, and actually was it last week or recently? It was the 20th anniversary of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place coming out on Channel 4. If you have not, I know. If you have not watched Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, that is a sub recommendation. It is genuinely, I think, still one of the funniest things ever created by man.
Subtext is for cowards.
If you're unaware, it's like it's a hack horror writer presenting a sort of sub Twilight Zone terrible like horror TV show that he made in the 80s and that has now been resurfaced, and it's interspersed with him and, you know, people in it giving sort of commentary on how it was made and the themes and stuff. It's one of the first big roles that Matt Berry had, and it's where you first encounter Matt Berry voice, I think. It's really iconic, and it's, you will see lots of Garth Marenghi reaction clips and stuff going around. The like the first episode is like 25 minutes wall-to-wall banger jokes. It's so good.
It's such tight writing.
The first thing he says is the blood and bits of sick. Like, that's the first thing he says. So good. I'm not recommending that for my recommendation this week, although do watch it. It's so good. I am recommending the second book in the series of in-character Garth Marenghi horror books that have been written now. The first was called Terratome. This second is called Incarcerat. They're really good. So they're written as like a book Garth Marenghi has written. And they star a horror author whose brain has started to like leak, and things that he has imagined in his horror books are all coming true.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like Argyle.
Like Argyle. this is another thing I'll be looking into this week, but there's a film called Argyle, which the director, Matthew Vaughan, retconned a book into existence to promote and then pretended the author was real. It's a whole thing. People thought it was Taylor Swift. It's really funny. Check out Incarcerate, which is the second one. Really good. It's got one of the best maps in the, you know, insert of a book that I've ever seen. It's really funny. It's great. Nate, what are you recommending this week?
So I'm recommending a board game called Successors by Phalanx. It was originally published by Avalon in 1997, I just found out. It's a card-driven game about the successors to Alexander the Great just going absolutely insane over the remains of his empire after he dies in Babylon. It's a really cool concept for a game, but apart from anything else, really, I think I'm just recommending the bit of history to you. The Diadochi Wars, or the Wars of the Diadochi. And it went on for like 70 years. It's cracking stuff. Is a good game, which is where I learned about it from. But it's really with Alexander the Great, for someone who had such a massive impact on history. Like, he doesn't fall into a neat, like, the Greeks or the Romans, you know, or the Tudors brackets, who doesn't really get taught in British schools. So I'm just sort of finding out now there was this sort of, like, yeah, just there's just a lot more history that I missed out on. And yeah, the Diadochi Wars and Successors by Phalanx. Lovely stuff.
Would you describe yourself as an amateur historian, Nate?
No, I describe myself as a professional historian, Alice. Because I played a board game.
How many hours of Total War do you have to play before you get your PhD in history? That is just about all we have time for this week on the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock Paper Shotgun's PC gaming podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion, which is that of Alice Bell. I think I missed out doing all this spiel at the start, to be honest, so nobody knows what any of our names are until now. I've been joined by James and by Nate. this episode you can
find...
Hi, I'm
James.
Hi, James.
I'm Gandalf.
Oh, shit, Gandalf just walked in. You can find Rock Paper Shotgun on all of your favourite and least favourite social medias. Just search Rock Paper Shotgun on Facebook, YouTube, Zitter, Blue Sky, I think, TikTok probably. All of them, we're knocking about. You can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com with your questions and suggestions and suggestions of card games that I won't like. And you can join the Discord, which is a lovely old place to hang out. The link is in the show notes. But for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell. It's goodbye from James.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Gandnate.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.